Hello and welcome to Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. This is volume 44, number 36, brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association and published on Friday, the 6th of September 2024. I'm Andy, your presenter and newsreader for the week. And in the news this week, I've a mix of reports as usual, although I'm pleased to say fewer crime stories than of late. In fact, there's nearly as many reports about the emergency services, fire crews and lifeboats, which I'm taking as a positive. I much prefer giving out good news. Coming your way during the next hour or so. First, we have a birthday. Best wishes from all at Grapevine go out to Maggie Duffy, celebrating next Friday the 13th. Have a great day, Maggie. Right, and now it's time for this week's local news. And as promised, I'm starting with the crime stories. However, can I just stress first that this first story is not a new assault, but an update on a story from earlier in the summer following police action. Three men are on bail following an attack which saw a man in his 40s left with severe facial injuries. The attack happened in the St George's Road and Kent Square areas of Great Yarmouth on July the 21st at around 9 p.m. The victim is said to have been approached by several men who punched and kicked him, leaving him with severe facial injuries. Three men were arrested at the scene on suspicion of assault and taken to Great Yarmouth Police Station for questioning. They have been bailed until September the 19th. And anyone with any information is asked to get in touch with Norfolk Police on 101. And secondly, police are still investigating a road rage attack that saw a man seriously injured after being punched in the face. And the assault happened between 6:30 a.m. and 6:50 a.m. on July the 30th in the lay-by of the A47 before the William Adams roundabout between Gorleston and Great Yarmouth. The victim was punched in the face by another man, resulting in serious injuries that required hospital treatment. The suspect was said to be driving a small grey car. A spokesperson for Norfolk Police said that inquiries are continuing and officers would like to speak to anyone who may have witnessed the incident or has any relevant dashcam footage. And anyone with information is asked to get in touch with Norfolk Police again. Slightly longer story this one, concerning shoplifting. Two serial shoplifters who stole items worth hundreds of pounds after repeatedly targeting the same stores have been jailed. Lee Cullinan, 31, and Danielle Masson, 43, both hit branches of the Co-op on multiple occasions in and around Great Yarmouth and also stole clothing from the original factory shop. Norwich Magistrates Court was told they had taken goods, including joints of meat, cheese and coffee, that were easy to sell quickly to raise cash to feed their drug habits. Masson of Column Road in Gorleston was jailed for 16 weeks after pleading guilty to 8 thefts on various dates between May the 22nd and August the 31st. She also admitted breaching a previous 8-week suspended prison sentence, a community order, and failing to cooperate with a drug testing order. Josephine Jones, prosecuting, said she had walked off with everything from joints of beef to huge amounts of coffee from the co-op and farm foods, and clothes worth £357 from the original factory shop in Gorleston. Lucy Brightwell, mitigating, said she recognised she was in the Last Chance Saloon, but that she had been attempting to tackle her addiction to heroin and crack. She had buried her head in the sands and was in a crisis state, she added. In separate offences, Cullinan, of no fixed abode, admitted 7 separate charges of shop theft and an attempted theft. He was jailed for 12 weeks, despite him pleading to the court it was the 6th birthday of his child and he was desperate to attend celebrations. The court heard he had a very large number of previous convictions for shoplifting, while his latest spree saw him steal goods worth more than £500. Miss Brightwell said prison would not help his underlying drug addiction issues. Magistrates told him immediate custody was the only option and that post-sentence supervision will hopefully address your issues with drugs. A short report about a burglary at a petrol station. Vapes and cigarettes have been stolen from a petrol station during an overnight raid. Police were called to the Esso petrol station in Beccles Road, Gorleston at 5:30 a.m. on Tuesday. A male broke a window at around 2:30 a.m. and stole various items, including vapes and cigarettes. And a Norfolk police spokeswoman confirmed enquiries are ongoing. Oh, a report of a stabbing. A man has been in court accused of stabbing a friend with a knife after an argument. Callum Envis appeared in custody at Norwich Magistrates Court following an incident in Great Yarmouth on August the 30th. The 38-year-old, of no fixed abode, spoke only to confirm his name and age. He did not enter pleas to charges of malicious wounding, possession of a bladed article, and assaulting an emergency worker. Josephine Jones, prosecuting, said he had been arrested while walking to the pub after a number of people had allegedly seen him holding a kitchen knife with a 3-to-4-inch blade. On the same evening, another man was rushed to the James Paget Hospital following an incident in which he suffered a number of stab wounds. Magistrates committed the case to Norwich Crown Court after being told malicious wounding was too serious to be heard before them. They remanded Envis to remain in prison until a preliminary hearing scheduled for September the 30th. Annette Hall, defending, said a bail application may be submitted at a later date. Oh, and a hit and run. A woman was seriously injured after a hit-and-run crash in Ormsby St Margaret on Monday morning. A cyclist was hit by a car on Yarmouth Road at 7:45 a.m. The cyclist, a woman in her 30s, was taken to the James Paget University Hospital with serious injuries. The driver of the car failed to stop at the scene of the crash in the village near Great Yarmouth. Those who witnessed or have any information or dashcam footage of the incident that may help with the investigation are asked to get in contact with Norfolk Police, again on 101. Right, that's the end of the crime stories. I have a report here about a Falklands veteran with a problem. A Falklands war veteran has gone into battle against the council over delays to processing his blue badge parking permit. Wayne Sharp, 61, of Lowestoft, works as a support worker and carer for disabled people and adults with learning disabilities, primarily in the Great Yarmouth area. He depends on his blue badge, as he suffers from a neurological movement disorder, meaning he cannot walk long distances, and depends on being able to park on double yellow lines when he visits clients. Mr. Sharp says he completed his application for his parking permit to be extended in June, in plenty of time for a September the 8th deadline. He was told it would take up to 12 weeks to be processed, but that timeline has now slipped, leaving him without a blue badge from September the 9th. When my blue badge expires on September the 8th, I'll be in a right mess. Work will be very difficult and inconvenient, as I do park safely on double yellows to minimise distances I walk when I visit patients, Mr. Sharp said. My main annoyance is that I've done everything by the book and applied before the deadline in June, so to be told I won't receive my renewed one for 3 months is infuriating. Aged just 19 and only 6 months into his military career, Mr. Sharp was in a Royal Army Medical Corps unit that sailed with the task force to the Falkland Islands after the invasion in 1982. Later, he spent 3 years living and working with the military in Cyprus before later returning to England to continue working in the medical industry. He now hopes Suffolk County Council can quickly resolve his blue badge saga so he can continue offering care to the vulnerable. However, this looks unlikely, as the council has said there's a national backlog of applications, but it is trying hard to rectify the problem. A spokesman said, councils have up to 12 weeks to process blue badge requests, and generally Suffolk County Council does it quicker than this. We are currently seeing a significant increase in the number of applications, which means it's taking us around 13 weeks. We're fixing the backlog by giving residents extra time to apply and putting extra staffing resources in place. We encourage anyone who has concerns to contact us for advice and to discuss alternative short-term arrangements. Now, I've got a group of reports that are in the sort of planning and property sort of category. And this concerns a fence row in Bradwell, this first one. A tussle over a back garden trellis has seen a woman win her appeal against her local council. The dispute began last year when Geraldine Roberts put up a wooden screen on top of a fence in her back garden at her home on Malkin Green in Bradwell. At the time, she felt she was being disturbed, overlooked, and suffering from a loss of privacy from neighbouring children playing on a slide to the rear of her own back garden. Miss Roberts, who's in her 70s, applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to retain the trellis, which has already been erected on top of the existing 2-metre-high fence. But her neighbours objected, calling it an eyesore, which obstructs the view of our children who are only playing in their garden, looking at planes flying by, not being rude or naughty. Despite the objection, planners approved the application. But this was not the end of the saga. As part of the planning permission, the council had imposed a 3-year time limit on the trellis. The condition said that this period should be sufficient to allow both neighbours to continue enjoying the benefits of their gardens whilst the slide is in use. Miss Roberts appealed the condition to the Planning Inspectorate, a government agency which can overturn decisions where it thinks councils have gone against planning law. She said the time limit was unreasonable and she had no control over the slide and how long it would remain or whether it might be replaced with some other item of play equipment of equal or greater height. Her appeal has been granted. Terence Kenman Lane, planning inspector, said there was no reason to suggest the effect of the trellis would increase after 3 years and the condition was therefore unreasonable and unnecessary. In her appeal letter, Ms. Roberts had said she put the trellis up after explaining to her neighbour the problems she was having with his children invading her privacy. The whole process has been time-consuming, detrimental to my health and well-being, all to gain privacy in my own home, she added. A council plan for a football stadium. Talks are underway to build a new home for a town's football club after its stadium was closed over 2 years ago. Great Yarmouth Borough Council and Galston Football Club have announced that they are working on a solution to bring Gorston Football Club back to its roots with the development of a new stadium. The Greens are currently playing at the home of Great Yarmouth Town Football Club, the Wellesley. The scheme to have the Greens back home is called Project Bring Gorston Back to Gorston, and both the club and council are considering all options available to support the club to ensure a long and sustainable future in the borough. A spokesman for the football club said, "We're delighted to be working with Great Yarmouth Borough Council on finding a long-term solution for the club to have a home again in Gorston. To have the club playing once again in Gorston is so positive for the local community, especially for the hundreds of footballers who represent the club on a weekly basis. As one of the largest football clubs in Norfolk, from under sixes to adults, boys and girls, it is essential we sustain this vital community asset." Councillor Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "We're absolutely delighted to be working with Gorston FC to try and bring the club back to its hometown. This is the start of a process that will hopefully see the dream realised. There's a long way to go, but everyone is working hard to restore Gorston FC to the town for the benefit of fans and everyone in the borough. The club plays a vital role in providing accessible sporting opportunities in the borough, and we all hope this can continue long into the future in Gorston." The club spokesman said no further details are currently available, but added, "More information will be shared as the work progresses." And by way of a bit of background on football in Gorston, the club moved to the recreation ground in Gorston in 1889, with the first match of the ground played on November the 9th. A record attendance of 4,473 was set in 1951 for an FA Cup first round replay against Orient. In 1982, the club left the recreation ground to move to Emerald Park in the town. And in July 2022, they left Emerald Park to play at Lowestoft Town FC for the season 2022-23. For the next season, 23-24, the club reached an agreement with Great Yarmouth Council to use its stadium, the Wellesley, in Great Yarmouth, and to lead on some much-required developments to the site to ensure the stadium could meet FA requirements. Story of one of the hotels in Great Yarmouth. A seafront hotel with 26 bedrooms and a restaurant has hit the market with a guide price of £1.25 million. The freehold of the Kensington Hotel in Great Yarmouth is for sale through leisure property specialist Fleurettes. The business is located along North Drive, and it's a short walk away from the Golden Mile and Britannia Pier. It's a spacious 3-4 storey detached hotel, and it overlooks the Venetian waterways. There are 26 ensuite rooms with standard, superior, family and sea view options. There are also 2 fully self-contained private apartments, 1 2-bed and the other 3-bed, and a manager's flat. The property boasts a sea view restaurant with 60 covers and an outdoor seating out the front of the property and a car park for space for 16 vehicles. Mark Phillips, senior associate at Fleurette, said, "The Kensington Hotel is a family-run business situated in a prominent position overlooking the Victorian Gardens and Sandy Beach. The business has been run by the current owners since 2004 and is now being offered for sale due to retirement. Open all year and benefiting from both commercial and leisure trade, this opportunity would ideally suit an existing operator who is looking to expand their portfolio." Maria Grimmer, whose family own the Kensington Hotel, said, "The Kensington occupies a most enviable setting on the seafront. It attracts not only local business and visitors, but also provides high-quality on-site residential accommodation for any new owner, although it could provide additional letting accommodation. Its superb seafront location is part of its unique appeal." Property story, if we can call it that, from Caister. A pub has closed down on the coast, with its departing landlords laying the blame on astronomical costs charged by the venue's owners. Julia and Stuart Basson ran the King's Arms on West Road in Caister for the last 5 years. But the couple have decided not to release their lease with owners the Stonegate Group. Miss Basson, 44, said, "With the offer to renew, the costs were astronomical, double what I paid when I went in." When the couple first took over the pub in August 2019, the cost for allowing them to buy wine from a brewery other than Stonegate was £800 a year. But this was going up to £2,500, she said. For spirits, the price was increasing from £3,000 to £6,000. "Only a mug would have re-signed the deal," Ms. Basson said. "It was not going to be financially viable to take on another lease, so I packed up and moved." A spokesman for Stonegate Group said, "We can confirm the King's Arms in Caister has temporarily shut its doors from August the 27th while we actively recruit for a new publican to run the much-loved pub." Ms. Basson said she had mixed feelings leaving the pub. "I miss the people already. I've met some of the most fantastic people. Customers helped her through tough times, including the death of her father and a back injury she suffered in a car crash. They're a fantastic group of customers." The couple, originally from Watford, have now moved to Alton Broad and are planning to go on holiday. Despite the departure, Miss Basson has fond feelings for the pub itself. "I do hope that it reopens because I would like to go back as a customer and be on the other side of the bar," she said. "There isn't a pub in Caister quite like the King's Arms." The pub scene in Caister has seen a wave of changes over the past couple of years, marked by closures, reopenings and ownership shifts. The Gate, a well-known local spot, reopened in February this year following a £200,000 refurbishment. However, this was not the first time the pub had attempted a revival. In January last year, only 2 months after a previous reopening, the building was boarded up, with metal gates placed over the doors and windows by its owners, the Stonegate Group. In April, a new landlord took over, but management changed hands again in September, with the venue swapping landlords 3 times over the previous 11 months. Similarly, the Ship Inn, also owned by Stonegate, faced its own set of difficulties after closing in November 2022 due to declining footfall and soaring electricity bills. The pub's future seemed uncertain. However, it found new life under new ownership in December 2023. Now, I promised you some stories about firefighters and life crew, so here they are. The first concerns firefighters, who have been commended for saving the life of a man and dogs trapped in a huge flat fire in Great Yarmouth. On the morning of June the 22nd, members of the fire station's White Watch, one of the 4 teams on call there, rushed to a blaze on Northgate Street. When they arrived, two buildings were well alight and persons were reported inside. One of them was trapped at a roof-level dormer window with no obvious exit. Thick black smoke was seen rising into the sky as the firefighters rescued the man using a ladder at the front of the burning building. In the end, one person and 10 dogs were saved from the blaze. The dogs were supported with specialist oxygen masks. Sadly, another dog who was rescued after being trapped in the burnt-out building for 4 days was later put to sleep. The roof of the building completely collapsed in the fire. Deputy Chief Fire Officer Scott Norman said the crew's swift and professional actions in conducting a walk-down ladder rescue from the front of the building undoubtedly saved the life of this resident. The solid foundation set at this point of the incident also contributed to preventing the spread of fire to the neighbouring properties, he added. On Friday, August the 30th, Great Yarmouth White Watch received a Chief Fire Officer commendation for their meritorious actions. These commendations are given out for particularly difficult life-saving actions. And there are 4 watches on call at Great Yarmouth Fire Station, identified by the colours, red, white, blue and green. The King's Arms pub was included in the commendation as they provided support during the incident in the form of refreshments, shelter and facilities. Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service said community support is imperative for their response and they recognise their firefighters appreciate the kindness shown to them. The commendation was put forward by Station Manager Chris Harding Hook and the presentation by Deputy Chief Fire Officer Norman. And another rescue story, this time a yacht. 4 people and a dog had to be rescued after their yacht ran aground near Great Yarmouth. The 23-foot vessel came into trouble at Post 36 in Breydon Water during some strong winds last Thursday. The Great Yarmouth RNLI were quickly dispatched to the scene amid fears the rising tide could blow the stricken boat further into trouble with just 3 life jackets between the 4 people. It was decided the safest action would be to tow the boat to safety with the crew still on board as the lifeboat itself was at risk of running aground in the shallow water. With a gentle tug from the lifeboat John Rowntree, the boat became free from the thick mud. And once free, the boat's battery was found to be flat, so the lifeboat crew towed the vessel to Goodchild Marine. A story of work on a new lifeboat. Volunteers have launched a new £1.6 million lifeboat for a day of intensive training in the North Sea. The crew of Caister Independent Lifeboat have been learning the ropes on board their new Medina-class boat ahead of its official naming ceremony. It's expected the boat will be going on service in the next couple of weeks. Paul Garrod, lifeboat chairman, said, "The boat is all ready to go. The crew are now in intensive training as it's a completely new boat to us. When our coxswain is 100% ready, he'll put her out on service," he added. Crew trained on Sunday, September the 1st at Scroby Sands. "It was the first day we had her out in quite good seas and it did the job perfectly," Mr. Garrod said. The boat also performed some towing exercise with the old vessel, the Bernard Matthews. Earlier last week, crew members launched the boat at midnight as a trial run of calls that come in the dark. Meanwhile, in a boost for Caister Lifeboat, energy company RWE has pledged to sponsor the charity's regular fundraising events. Philip Croston Clegg, Scroby Sands Offshore Wind Farm General Manager, said, "Our operational staff are regular sea users, sailing in vessels off the Great Yarmouth coast in all weathers in order to maintain our fleet of turbines. Sponsorship of Caister Lifeboat allows us to directly contribute to the safety and well-being of our community members who rely on the lifeboat service in times of need." Aaron Thurlow, senior crew member, Case the Lifeboat, said, "The RWE sponsorship will be put towards the expenses for each of our four events we hold through the year. These events are a major part of our fundraising and in turn raise around £30,000, which goes into the day-to-day running of the lifeboats and station." Case the Volunteer Lifeboat Service, run entirely by volunteers, is the only independent lifeboat station in the United Kingdom that operates both an all-weather lifeboat and an inshore lifeboat. The date for naming the new vessel has not yet been confirmed. And a donation to the lifeboats. Rupert Lowe, Great Yarmouth MP, has donated his monthly net parliamentary salary to Hemsby Lifeboat. The donation to the independent lifeboat team will fund an essential underwater sonar search unit that will improve the effectiveness of search and rescue operations. Mr. Lowe said, "I visited Hemsby Lifeboat during the election campaign and was moved by their work and dedication to the cause. Going out on the boat with the crew was an incredible experience, showing me the intense conditions that the team operate under. I am delighted to assist their efforts with this donation and look forward to using my influence to help them in whatever way I can, particularly on the coastal erosion crisis which is threatening their station." Chris Batten, lifeboat helmsman, said, "We are all so grateful to Rupert for his selfless act and generosity. Regardless of political persuasion, this says a lot about the man behind the politics. This donation will allow us to increase significantly our search and rescue capabilities and identify and recover casualties far more efficiently." Mr. Lowe has pledged to donate his monthly net salary to good causes across his constituency each month. And my last lifeboat story concerns another donation. A lifeboat boss has described how a donation from a wind farm company has boosted its life-saving capabilities. The Sheringham Shoal Offshore Wind Farm, run by Equinor, regularly contributes £100,000 annually to its community fund. Its fund had enabled C. Pauling Independent Lifeboat Station to upgrade its rescue resources with a new ArgoCat all-terrain amphibious rescue vehicle. Chris Ball, vice chairman of the C. Pauling Independent Lifeboats, "What a game changer this has proved to be." He described the prior struggle of safely transferring casualties from the beach to the lifeboat station and the improved ease since the vehicle came into service. For 5 years, the team had made do with a quad bike towing an inshore lifeboat to transport casualties. The ArgoCat, as a multi-wheeled vehicle, posed a more efficient solution, boasting features that enable it to work on sand and in surf, tow the lifeboat and transport crew and equipment. It can additionally accommodate a full-size stretcher, giving the crew the ability to administer first aid on the move. The vehicle's amphibious nature protects each piece of its internal mechanical running gear from the hazardous effects of salt water. Modifications to C. Pauling's ArgoCat also included rooftop stretcher storage, additional lighting, a first aid kit and VHF radio. Equipment such as defibrillators and oxygen can also be carried when needed. The ArgoCat's deployment and operation have been incorporated into the station's weekly training activities, according to Mr. Ball. He thanked the Sheringham Shoal Community Fund's support, plus other key contributors, enabling them to invest in the ArgoCat. The C. Pauling Independent Lifeboat is self-funded and is a registered charity. As of 2023's close, the Community Fund, managed by the Norfolk Community Foundation, had granted over £1.2 million since its 2010 foundation.
on a cold winter's night, with a storm at its height, a lifeboat answered the call. They pitched and they tossed till we thought they were lost, as we watched from the harbour wall. Though the night was pitch black, there was no turning back, for someone was waiting out there. But each volunteer had to live with his fear, as they joined in a silent prayer. Carry us home,
home, home from the sea. Angels of mercy, answer our plea.
And carry us home,
home, home from the sea. Carry us safely home from the sea.
As they battled their way past the mouth of the bay, it was blowing like never before. As they gallantly fought, every one of them thought of loved ones back on the shore. Then a flicker of light, and they knew they were right. There she was, on the crest of a wave. She's an old fishing boat, and she's barely afloat. Please God, there are souls we can save, and carry them home,
home, home from the sea. Angels of mercy, answer our plea. Carry us safely home from the sea.
And back in the town, in a street that runs down to the sea and the harbour wall, they had gathered in pairs at the foot of the stairs to wait for the radio call. And just before dawn, when all hope was gone, came a hush and a faraway sound. 'Twas the coxswain, he roared, "All survivors on board, thank God, and we're homeward bound." To carry them home,
home, home from the sea. Angels of mercy, answer our plea.
A couple of travel stories now. The first one is a rail disruption. When have we heard that before? Rail passengers will face disruption in Norfolk and Waveney this month due to 3 weekends of engineering work. The work will affect Greater Anglian trains between Great Yarmouth and Norwich and Lowestoft and Norwich, with rail replacement bus services in place. The maintenance takes place on September the 7th and September the 8th, September 14th and 15th, and September the 22nd. These essential works are vital for a safe and efficient railway network, Mark Walker, Network Rail Anglia Route Infrastructure Engineer, said. This engineering work will help us to continue to provide a reliable service for our passengers. The project includes replacing old rails between Reedham and Haddiscoe and work on the drainage system at Sirlingham. Jamie Bills, Greater Anglia Managing Director, added, "We would like to thank customers for their patience and understanding while this work is carried out. People depend on Britain's Railway for their daily commute, to visit friends and loved ones, and to get them home safe every day. And for rail, to buses. And it's called for a new bus service. On the outskirts of one of Norfolk's largest towns is a retail park that is home to dozens of popular high street bands. But unless you own a car, can bear to face a half an hour's walk from Great Yarmouth Town Centre, or you're willing to pay out for a taxi, then the Gapton Hall retail park is effectively inaccessible, according to a transport lobby group. This is because no regular bus runs to the shopping centre, which is situated at a roundabout heading towards Galston, says the East Norfolk Transport Unions Association. Now, Steve Hewitt of the association is demanding Norfolk County Council look at introducing a new regular bus route from the Market Gates bus station to the retail centre and the nearby Harfrey's industrial estate. Mr Hewitt, 68, says the fact that it is easier for people of Yarmouth to get a bus to Norwich to go to Marks and Spencer because there's not a regular bus to Gapton Hall Retail Park, which is home to a Marks and Spencer branch, highlights the issue. It is so wrong in so many ways that it is easier to get a bus to Norwich to go to Marks and Spencer when the chain is literally at Gapton Hall, Mr Hewitt said. For those who drive, then there's no issue. But for the rest of us, it's out of the question. The council have been good at spending their £49 million from the last government's bus service improvement plan, but to introduce a link here would be hugely beneficial. Mr Hewitt said at a recent meeting, a County Hall representative had said the proposed link from Market Gates to the Gapton Hall retail park would be looked more favourably when the Herring Bridge third crossing was completed. He said, "We have a large number of excuses from Norfolk County Council as to why they're not prepared to sponsor a service, such as too much traffic and a lack of bus stops, etc. We at the Transport Users Association feel that a large proportion of the local population is being denied the chance to shop or search for work in these areas due to a lack of public transport. Traffic has reduced on the dual carriageway since Herring Bridge opened, so now let's see if they consider our pledge with seriousness and give the people of the town the connectivity they need and deserve." Norfolk County Council's bus service improvement plan was introduced in 2022 as a blueprint for the council's aims for buses over the next 5 years. It outlines proposals for simplified ticketing and journey information, fare cuts for the under 25s, cleaner, greener buses and improved accessibility. The County Council was asked to comment on the new bus route proposal. And moving on to medical matters, NHS talking therapies. People living in Norfolk or Waveney will benefit from an improved new NHS mental health service. Those in these areas experiencing anxiety or depression will have access to the NHS talking therapies, which is set to launch today. The service will be delivered as a partnership between Norfolk and Suffolk NHS Foundation Trust and the mental health charity Norfolk and Waveney Mind. Alex Michael, Interim Director of Operations at Norfolk and Waveney Mind, said, "This is a new, innovative way of collectively providing vital early mental health support to the people of Norfolk and Waveney, and we're delighted to be involved in this important collaborative partnership. We look forward to working with our partners over the next 5 years to ensure greater equality in access to and experience of local mental health services. I am confident the new model will deliver effective therapies to many more people across our region. This transformative approach to operating NHS talking therapies is a major step forward towards our ambition that no one in Norfolk and Waveney should have to face poor mental health alone. The new look NHS talking therapies, formerly known as the Wellbeing Service, has been shaped by service users, families, carers and clinicians. It will provide personalised care and support as close as possible to people's home or workplace with increased locations for the service. The service will still offer the same treatments as before, including cognitive behaviour therapy and counselling, but with a renewed focus on enabling those who may have trouble accessing the services to be able to obtain the support they need. The new multi-partnership approach brings together voluntary, community, social enterprise and statutory organisations and will ensure people in Norfolk and Waveney can get quick and easy access to talking therapy services. And a new initiative focusing on women's health, again in Norfolk and Waveney. Women in Norfolk and Waveney are set to benefit from a new £600,000 health hub. However, there is one catch. They will not be able to visit it. This is because the hub, which will be offering support for needs including menopause and contraception, will not exist in a physical form. Instead, the project will see the creation of a virtual hub, which aims to improve access to services across the region. The investment will see several existing services expanded through additional staff training, such as providing menopause awareness courses and training up additional contraception fitters. The virtual hub will also see staff travel across the county using the Wellness on Wheels bus to carry out cervical screenings, massage and signpost support services. The funding for the hub is part of a wider NHS scheme to improve access to women's health, which has seen every integrated care board in the country allocated £595,000 to establish similar schemes. Frankie Swords, Executive Medical Director of NHS Norfolk and Waveney, said the decision to create the virtual hub had been made to avoid creating geographic inequalities. She said, "The decision to establish a virtual women's health hub was driven by the feedback provided at a large stakeholder workshop, as well as the geographical size and diversity of the area. With communities spread across a wide region, a single physical hub would leave many women underserved. A virtual model allows us to deliver care more flexibly and equitably." She added that the approach also assured that using the 2-year funding to develop skills would allow the benefits to continue beyond this period, while a physical hub would have been forced to close if the funding was not renewed. She added, "By employing a virtual model and focusing on education, healthcare staff can use the training and expertise they gain as part of this initiative well beyond the 2-year period." While the investment has been welcomed, Women's Health campaigner Sharon Plummer said she would have been keen to see a physical hub established. Mrs. Plummer, a Norwich-based personal trainer, said, "Anything that creates more awareness of the issues women face is wonderful, but I think it needs to go further. Often when money is spent on women's health services, it can feel just like a ticking box, and it doesn't always think about every aspect of our needs." Mrs. Plummer said that a physical hub would have been beneficial, as it would have helped to encourage women to speak more openly about their challenges. She said, "Women love to gather, and nothing is more helpful than being able to share their story with somebody and hear that they know what she's going through and understand. I feel that women are now becoming more educated about what help is out there and where they can go. but having a physical place would be much better. It sometimes feels as though we're very good at focusing on the medical aspects, such as giving out medication, but less so on other aspects like lifestyle choices and diet. Sometimes women need more than simply being given medication, for example. The hub is being designed to expand on primary care services rather than replace them, with GPs still set to be first point of contact for women. But it aims to improve access to support in a number of areas, including menopause and perimenopause, sexual health and cervical screening. The plans are due to be discussed by Norfolk's Health Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Thursday, during which councillors will be able to quiz health bosses over the vision. And an animal story. Well, I suppose so. It's Balnham Zoo, so it's got to be animals, hasn't it? After its successful inaugural event, a Norfolk Zoo has announced a second after-hours evening for this month. Balnham Zoo is set to become alive after darkness falls next weekend, offering guests exclusive evening access and a festival twist. There'll be live music, children's funfair rides and various performances, not to mention a mouth-watering array of food trucks. Visitors will witness the zoo's animals and meet Toby the Tiger, the friendliest big cat at the zoo. Joshua Hunter-Hall, head of marketing at the zoo, said, "After the tremendous success of our first Zoo Do event, which exceeded all expectations by selling out and receiving so many positive reviews, we can't wait to welcome guests back to Balnham Zoo after hours. We hope to recapture the carnival spirit of Zoo Do and to spend an evening with some of the most endangered animals on the planet." And tickets are selling fast at just £12.50 per person. The family-friendly Zoo Do 2, which runs from 4pm to 8pm on September the 7th, promises a unique and thrilling experience. Ah, a report on a local man's sporting campaign. Alfie Hewitt, a local man, wasn't hanging around after finally starting his Paralympic campaign in Paris. It's just a few weeks since Novak Djokovic arrived at Roland Garros looking to complete the career Golden Slam with the previously elusive Olympic gold. Norwich's Hewitt is a man on the same mission. The 30-time major champion singles silver medal 8 years ago in Rio, his best return from the Games. After 2 days of watching the action, top seed Hewitt, 26, took just 53 minutes to beat Israel's Sergi Lizov, 6-love, 6-1, on the Philippe Chatrier show court. Japan's Daisu Arya now awaits in the last 16, the Brit benefiting from the first round bye. I'm very happy. It's actually quite difficult when the tournament has been going on for 2 days and you've been on the practice court, said Hewitt. You just want to embrace it and get in the thick of it, and I've seen what the atmosphere has been like on all the courts, so I just wanted to get going. It was so much fun out there. It's one of the most enjoyable matches I've played. The iconic home of the French Open has been a happy hunting ground for Hewitt. Alongside long-time doubles partner Gordon Reid, they're unbeaten on the Paris clay since 2020. He has also won 3 singles titles here, although the most recent was 3 years ago. It's a unique experience for us to have loads and loads of people watching, and the noise has been mind-blowing, so you've just got to enjoy it and not try to put the stress and pressure on winning. It's been an incredible few days, and I hope more and more fans come and watch throughout the week. It's very different from the normal French Open atmosphere. Top seeds Hewitt and Reid start their doubles campaign against Chile's Alexander Cataldo and Brian Tapia, looking to upgrade their silvers from 2016 and 2020. And my last story is about some lucky people. people in Norfolk have won more than £1.1 million in this month's premium bonds draw. In total, 423 locals took home a share of £1,185,000, averaging £2,743 per person. One lucky winner walked away with £100,000, and two others scooped £50,000 each. 10 people won £25,000, and 24 won £10,000. Further 25 won £5,000, while hundreds more got £1,000. And premium bonds are an investment product from National Savings and Investments, otherwise known as NS&I. Unlike other investments, where investors earn regular interest or a regular dividend income, bonds are entered into a monthly prize draw where people can win between £25 and £1 million. Andrew Westhead, NS&I retail director, said, "The quickest way to check if you've won a prize is to use our Premium Bonds Prize Checker app, check online, or even ask Alexa from the second working day of each month onwards." Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader and presenter next week will be Margaret, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.